Legislative Review, a program focusing on issues before the Alaska Legislature featuring the faculty and staff of the University of Alaska at Fairbanks. I'm your host, Scott Sterling. Our guests today are Drs. Michael and Christine Economides of the Petroleum Engineering Department at the University of Alaska at Fairbanks. Our topic is oil development and Alaska's future. Welcome to the show, Michael. Christine, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
I guess I'd like to start off by talking about the current status of oil development in Alaska. It's fairly common knowledge that state revenues are anywhere between 90% and 97% derived from Prudhoe Bay. What will be the role of oil over the next 50 years in terms of the state's economy and the state's revenues?
I believe that Alaska will continue to be a profoundly dependent economy on petroleum. It will continue to be so for easily the next 25 years, and I can safely say over the next 50 years. Petroleum is really the reality in the state, any way you look at it. And I also believe that even with the present recession notwithstanding, Alaskan economy will continue to prosper in an unusually high rate when compared with other states. I believe that the petroleum development will expand, and projections are that we could easily double or triple the present petroleum output in the state with any reasonable leasing plan over the next, say, 15 years or so.
So the future, we are going to be very concerned with oil development, at least for the next 25 years. Christine, could you tell me what is the professional evaluation of how much longer Prudhoe Bay will be a viable oil field?
Well, Prudhoe Bay has about, 8 billion barrels of recoverable oil, and we're taking out about 1.5 million barrels per day. So if you just do a little bit of arithmetic, that works out to be around 16 years if we can maintain the oil production at its present rate, assuming that there will be at some point decline, and we may be near that point right now. The life of the field should extend somewhat beyond that 16 years.
All right. What about the other fields that are coming online? What are the prospects for new oil fields in Alaska?
Well, the likelihood of another Prudhoe Bay is remote. There is a certain statistical improbability that we will find another reservoir of that size. I presume that most people are aware of the fact that Prudhoe Bay is the largest field ever discovered in the North American continent, one of the largest ever discovered in the world. It's a monstrosity. It's nothing that you would expect to have very many of. I believe that the future production will come from smaller reservoirs. Now, there are a lot of tricky issues here associated with these so-called smaller reservoirs. First of all, there is an issue of perception. That is, the psychological perception, both within the population as well as with the oil industry, is that anything short of Prudhoe Bay is, of course, anticlimactic. While it isn't, here we have, for example, the Kuparik field, which is a giant reservoir by anybody's standards, and is generating very little emotion around it. People are upset that it's not as big as Prudhoe Bay. It's what I have written in the past, and I quoted a former oil executive in the state, where we said we are suffering through the Prudhoe syndrome here. On the other hand, there are very real issues associated with smaller reservoirs, even if they are giant by anybody else's reckoning, because of the transportability factor. Like a reservoir of, say, 100 million barrels, which would make everybody excited, say, in a place like Pennsylvania and Kansas and Oklahoma, is really considered a dry hole in the Alaska North Slope because of the fact that it's not economical to operate, it's not economical to develop because of the enormous costs associated with that. So there are a lot of other prospects, though, in the state, other areas where petroleum exploration may, in fact, be quite attractive.
All right. Now, we're all aware that over the since the Sheffield administration took office, we've heard quite a bit about the Norton Sound oil leases and outer continental shelf oil lease development as a whole. I wanted to ask, there are crucial differences in terms of state revenues between state leases and federal leases. As we see offshore development in our smaller fields begin to be examined over the next few years, will we see the same kind of, I'm trying to get at how many state leases are going to be productive versus federal? Will we see our future development largely occur in federal areas or state or an admixture?
Well, the shallow waters off of the coast of Alaska will be leased by the state, the deeper waters by the federal government. The revenues from the Alaskan leases are going to be as high as what they are right now. But from the federal leases, the major benefit will be from the employment, hopefully, of Alaskans. And that's one thing also that I think the state needs to be more aware of, is the impact of employment by the industry on the state and how important that is, in addition to the direct dollars that we get from taxing or from royalty oil.
When we deal with federal leases, are they largely in the deeper waters, their outer continental shelf? Is this is the industry technologically ready to go in Arctic and northern Alaska conditions with these kind of leases?
I believe they are. I've asked this kind of question to major producers such as Shell and Exxon, and that is their answer, that they are ready to do this. They're waiting for the right discovery and the right economics. But their technology on offshore platforms and deep water drilling is always and has been for quite some time well ahead of what's actually being used technologically.
Does Alaska represent unique challenges to the oil industry technologically? And if so, have they been able to meet those challenges?
I think that they've done very well. The record is impressive as far as the few major accidents, environmental impacts, etc. The ice that forms each year in the Bering Strait area and in the Arctic is a problem that is not faced in other major oil-producing areas, so of course that implies some technological developments.
Okay. Michael, is there anything more about technology that...
Yes, the technology does pose unique issues, you know, the remoteness, the harshness of the environment. The reservoirs themselves are not any different than they are anywhere else, really. In fact, on the whimsical side, I have always found people be quite amused by the fact that oil, as it comes out of Prudhoe Bay, is still 140 degrees Fahrenheit as it would be anywhere else, although the top is, say, 60 degrees below or 100 degrees below, depending on the wind chill index of that day and so on. So the reservoir engineering per se is not really unique. There are some idiosyncratic issues here that are unique, and that's where our department, in fact, is in the process of developing. We are in the forefront of that technology development at this moment, and still in the reservoir areas. Case in point is what you can do with the natural gas, okay? Natural gas, you know, on the one hand, is a nuisance, but if we're a little bit innovative, we can do something with the natural gas, which we are suggesting to do, to upgrade it into a higher order hydrocarbon mixture, inject it back into the ground, and you kill, say, two birds with one stone. One, you dispose of a nuisance, and two, you are creating a very powerful enhanced oil recovery process, which is called the hydrocarbon miscible, which would, in fact, produce more oil out of the ground. So that's a sort of issue that really permeates the production up here. And of course, all of the cold issues, how you drill through 2,000 feet of permafrost and that sort of thing. But those are, although they were major challenges in the fact, they have been reduced to fairly routine technological feats today.
All right. So, Christine, go ahead.
I think one other thing to add is that when you go to the offshore reserves, transport, again, may come up as a problem. We're going to get too far from the pipeline. The gas pipeline has not been built. What he's mentioned about making use of natural gas from the reservoir may not always be possible And especially on smaller fields, their geological description may prohibit reinjection into a gas cap or such as that. So I think that transport is an issue which is sort of beyond our area of expertise, but it's going to be a problem, an important problem for development.
And transport is figuring very highly in the whenever the economics are examined of a given field.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'd like to move on kind of away from the technical side, and I'd like to talk more about, as professionals engaged in educating professionals for the oil industry, what about the economics of the oil industry and employment in the oil industry for Alaska? How can state policy reflect how important this industry is to us?
I think that one thing the state has done, if I can pat ourselves on the back a little bit, is to go ahead and back a petroleum engineering department so that some of the engineers in the oil industry will be indigenous to the state. Alaska hire laws have been respected by the industry, but really it's important to have technically educated people moving up in the ranks of the industry, because in the long run, if an Alaskan were the head man in Alaska, you might think that policy would definitely reflect what Alaskans would like to see happening here. And that's going to be the long run. But beyond that, we have a strong engineering school here also. It's important to see more engineers from our own engineering school, accountants from our business school, moving into the industry, providing good expertise. We hope that they're well trained here, and providing that Alaskan understanding that I think has been lacking somewhat in the industry.
Michael?
I'm going to be a little bit more critical, really, of how things have been done thus far on both sides. When I say both sides, I mean both the state as well as the industry. On the one hand, the presumption here is that taxing will do the trick. And it has gone a long way, really. The state has derived a number, a great amount of money from the industry. Anything that you see in the state of Alaska, it should be important for people to remember that it's oil, basically. When you're talking about hydroelectric power, don't ever forget that that's oil. I mean, that's what built it. When you're talking about airports in Galena or in XYZ Bush community, that's also oil. And that is really the economic impetus of the state. So we receive royalties, we receive taxes, we receive tariffs, and all of those things go into this kitty that eventually becomes the apple of contention among our brilliant legislators in Juneau, which decide to do what they are going to do. On the other hand, there is another way of going about it. For example, the state could try tax incentives, tax credits, that is, say, the oil industry by Alaskans, for example, or employs Alaskans, or there would be certain ways that certain Alaskan businesses may have the incentive to develop in certain areas to, in fact, service the petroleum industry in the state. And there are a lot of other things that could be done, really, through tax incentives. That is, if the state is willing to forgo a certain amount of its revenues from the petroleum industry, then that amount of funding, if it were to be channeled back into an Alaskan business or an Alaskan concern, with the multiplier in the economy, which is often lacking from the governmental squandering of funding that may go into projects of dubious distinction and dubious economic benefit, will, in fact, that multiplier develop the economy of Alaska, which is something that we are lacking. We are not a diversified economy. And by diversification, I don't only mean that we go into other resource industries like minerals or agriculture and so on, but we may evolve the service industry, an industrial base, manufacturing industry, and so on, which is something that we do not have right now. We have very little of it.
All right. It seems that the state has a schizophrenic attitude about the oil industry, and maybe the people at large do as well. Michael, you've written that we are anxious to garner all the benefits we can from the industry, but we seem to falter a little bit or feel a little bit guilty about how we use those benefits and how we should regard the industry. It seems to me that you're saying that the industry is here to stay, in our lifetimes, perhaps, and therefore it would be responsible for us to develop a state policy that says you're not an intruder, you're not a boom and bust kind of industry, you're something that's very vital to our economy. What are your suggestions for improving the incorporation of Alaskans into the industry so that we have a rational understanding that, we can help manage our resources, the industry, and our economy to the benefit of both the oil industry and the state? Where would you start with, for instance, improving employment?
Well, wait, how many questions
going to
that? That was an open-ended one there.
Well, I was trying to pull together the picture of how separated we are when we try to understand the impact of the oil industry versus how state policy is formulated. But as educators and as professionals in the oil industry, where would you start with improving employment? Christine, you mentioned that we have a strong engineering school. What can we do to help the industry realize that we're interested in having a long-term, stable relationship?
Well, I think one thing is that some of the things that we see in the press all the time tend to belittle this whole issue. For instance, how many times have you seen people running for governor use as an issue how we should be spending our revenues now because the oil's going to run out? I mean, that's always the issue. It's never how we should be addressing problems like what we're discussing right now in order to make more use of the industry as it is today. This is a sample question. I wonder how many people in Fairbanks think about the impact of a large yard and storage warehouses that is starting to be built and to be built up in the Fairbanks area because the haul road runs through Fairbanks. I mean, this is undoubtedly going to have, and already is having, a major impact on Fairbanks' economy. But you don't read about this in the papers, and you don't really think about it until you start to notice that it's more traffic in Fairbanks than it used to be, that there are restaurants that have grown up along the haul road and along these storage areas. Fairbanks is getting a piece of the oil industry right there, but we don't recognize it as such, I don't think.
Michael, how about the training of professionals? Are you looking, in when you discuss with prospective students what their futures are going to be, do you say, we can help you have a good career in Alaska, or are you forced to say, well, we may be able to help you in Alaska, but we have some problems?
Well, I don't think we have any trouble per se. We are a new program, of course. We have graduated only something like 10 people thus far, and with the exception of a couple, we have placed all of them with the petroleum industry in the state. We have a very good employment record already, very high salaries. Some of our students start in the order of $45,000 a year, which is not a shabby salary for a 21-year-old kid, you see. So we are not, the program also, at least this last year, was the largest engineering program in terms of number of majors at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. So there is a major interest. We have recruited people throughout the state. Many of our faculty are going to Anchorage to present, in fact, the petroleum engineering as a future career. We believe it's a major option. We believe it's a very lucrative option and a highly technological one at that. It's an area where a young man can or a young woman can get into the field and in a high technology field and do very well eventually. Christine already mentioned the issue of developing some of these people into very responsible positions with the petroleum industry in the future. That's one target that nobody should challenge as a very positive direction. There are a lot of things that one could do. Educating the people, not just the students, is important. I would like to stress again the issue of the industry has a reputation, say, among other people, that it's an industry belonging to outsiders. And I think the crux of the solution here is, in fact, to involve Alaskans in a meaningful way, not so much as secretaries or receptionists or unskilled workers, because the industry will say, hey, we have our quota, we hired all of the Alaskans you are asking. We would like the president, say, of ARCO Alaska, 10 years from now to be a person that was born in Anchorage. You see, that's really the name of the game.
Or maybe Fairbanks.
Or maybe Fairbanks. You see. I say Anchorage because half of the people in Alaska are from Anchorage, so chances are she would be from Anchorage.
Well, for sure, the people from Fairbanks would resent it if the president of ARCO was from Anchorage, not
well,
here.
Well, then maybe the vice the vice president should be from Fairbanks, from Anchorage, and the president should have two women. One from Anchorage and one from Fairbanks. That would be a unique situation.
All right. Could we talk a little bit about the economics of the industry? Can you give me an idea how important is Alaskan oil production to the needs of the United States consumption of oil? And then could you speak to the issue which is now before us? Recently there were legislative hearings about it, concerning export of Alaskan oil to foreign countries. Christine?
Well, I think there's no doubt that the Alaskan oil reserves and Alaskan oil production is essential to the United States because we represent, 15 to 20% of the total oil produced in the United States right now. Although the oil is very high priced here, and therefore it is somewhat in jeopardy when the price goes too low. It is such a high percentage of what the nation needs that in the event of surplus in the world bringing the price too low, it seems evident to me that the federal government is going to have to some way protect production of oil in Alaska, perhaps by import tariffs on foreign oil or whatever, because the Alaskan oil resource is just too large, and shutting it off altogether is not something that you could easily start back up again. It would be very expensive to do so.
You mentioned putting import tariffs on foreign oil. Protectionism is rapidly becoming a major concern among the industrialized nations of the world.
Dirty word?
The Reagan administration has stood for free trade. It's generally acknowledged by most people that free trade is desirable over protectionism. In the event that we put some kind of tariffs on foreign oil to protect Alaskan oil, could we expect some pretty dire consequences from that?
Or reprisals?
Reprisals?
Well, I think that that the question is very well put. I believe that I hope it will never have to impose tariffs on imported oil. And in fact, my personal projections and the projections of other people is that we are not going to ever have this glut that we have right now again, that we will return back in the very near future into a shortage. So we never have to do that. But if we do, if the glut continues, then I believe that if we reach a point that we have to impose tariffs, I think they will be imposed because of how important it is for national security and the economy of the country to continue our indigenous sources to flow uneventfully.
Let's look at the consequences of not doing so. Suppose we go from 40 to 50% foreign oil imports to 70 to 80% due to taking out Alaskan production. What might have been a fairly risky but overall safe percentage of foreign oil production starts to look like foreign oil control. And that could have dire consequences, and we've already seen what can happen.
Yes, this nation's experienced the use of oil as a very potent economic weapon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of us want to go through it again. Could we go back to the question of exporting Alaskan oil?
I'm sure
technically it's feasible. What about the desirability of it?
If we were to lift the ban on exports of Alaskan oil, then markets would develop primarily in Japan and Korea, in the oriental part of the world, and it will be much cheaper to transport the oil to those markets from Alaska than to do what is presently done, which is to take Alaskan oil either to the California coast or through Panama and into the Gulf of Mexico area, which is a very expensive proposition. Now, the price of the oil that Alaska gets its revenues on, the transport costs are subtracted from that. Is that not correct?
Mm-hmm.
So as transport costs are reduced, Alaska is going to get more revenue from the oil that is produced. So Alaska as a state stands to gain. But actually, I think that the United States stands to gain also. It's inefficient mode of production. The oil that is coming from Alaska to the United States, will still, most of it go that way anyway. That's one point that needs to be very clear, that allowing a lifting of the export ban will not immediately mean that all Alaskan oil will move to foreign countries. It won't happen that way. It would take a long time and probably wouldn't ever happen that way. But in the meantime, Alaska will have a more free economy. We were talking about freedom of business. We'll have more freedom to take the oil where it makes the best profit.
We're running out of time. I was going to ask you if there was anything you would like to say by way of closing regarding the future of the oil industry in Alaska. What kind of relationship you might like to see develop, or any thoughts of your own?
I am very upbeat about the future of petroleum development in the state. I think we have a lot to gain from that. We have already gained much from the petroleum development in the state. I would like to see a major improvement in the training and education of Alaskans. I don't mean just students at the university. I mean the Alaskans themselves to be more familiar with what the industry means to them and what it will mean to them in the future.
Christine?
Well, I also feel fairly optimistic about the future for the state regarding oil production. I should say very optimistic. I think that the state is much more aware. It's becoming more aware. I think our legislature is maturing, and that we need to be very aware on the federal level as well. The state needs to keep coming up with good ideas that keep Alaska in the running all the time in the oil industry.
Well, thank you both very much. It was a very interesting program. This has been Alaskan Legislative Review. Our guests tonight have been Drs. Michael and Christine Economides of the Petroleum Engineering Department at the University of Alaska at Fairbanks. I'm your host, Scott Sterling. Our executive producer is Carla Tanella. Alaskan Legislative Review is a production of KUAC FM at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. If you would like a cassette copy of this program, please write to KUAC FM, University of Alaska Fairbanks, 99701.